Now, let's go first to Minister Simon Coveney in our Cork studio. Minister, good afternoon. We'll talk to you about your party's Ardesh in just a moment, but I want to ask you about the events of the last few days in Northern Ireland. Dramatic events, and there was a statement which came in overnight from the Loyalist Communities Council, which is made up of Loyalist paramilitary groups, and it's warning the next DUP leader to stop concessions to Sinn Féin, and also warning Irish government ministers, no doubt including yourself, and officials, that they're no longer welcome in Northern Ireland. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's very unhelpful as an intervention. It just drives more tension and more polarisation in terms of language, and that's not the way we're going to solve anything. You know, the way in which you solve problems in Northern Ireland where there are deep divisions in terms of people's perspectives is through dialogue, through discussion. And so the idea that some in the Loyalist community would be blaming the Dublin government, as they call it, for all the woes linked to Brexit and the protocol simply isn't accurate. That's the first thing. But, you know, we are the ones that are now looking for the compromises and the pragmatism that can actually help to ensure that the protocol can be implemented in a way that is more acceptable. And so the idea that we are effectively demonised by leaders within loyalism is really unhelpful. And whatever about saying that politicians are not welcome, to say that they're officials as well. I mean, we have people who are living and working.
Is there an implied threat there, Minister? I mean, do you see that as being a little bit more sinister than just being unwelcome?
Well, I mean, some people have interpreted it in that way. I think it would be helpful if political leaders in Northern Ireland who represent unionists and loyalist communities would come out and actually clarify that there is no threat to officials or politicians from the Irish government, because we have a permanent presence in Northern Ireland in terms of our officials. They're doing a fantastic job constantly trying to reach out and listen to people and feeding back to me and the Taoiseach's offices. And the idea that there would be a signal that an Irish government presence is no longer welcome in Northern Ireland, I think is a huge backward step.
Okay.
Particularly given the challenges we've got to face together. The challenges don't go away because the blame game becomes more aggressive. If anything, they get worse. So the protocol issues, which they're primarily referring to, are issues that have been negotiated and agreed by the British government and the EU. The Irish government, of course, is part of those negotiations, but only part of those negotiations. And what we are all trying to do now is to calm tensions, listen to people's concerns, see how we can respond to those concerns within the parameters of the protocol, which is international law, and show the kind of generosity and flexibility that's necessary in those responses, which I think the EU is up for doing, if the British government is as well. And so this idea that somehow we shut out Dublin or the Republic of Ireland out of Northern Ireland, which is what some people seem to be calling for now, that we demonise, legitimate calls, for example, for the implementation of what was agreed in terms of language and culture legislation, which involves the Irish language, okay. Ulster Scots.
I want to ask you, Minister, what was the Irish government's involvement, or did you have an involvement, you or your officials, in the deal that was done involving Edwin Poots, involving Sinn Féin, to get Westminster to deal with the Irish Language Act? Was the Irish government a part of that, of the negotiations around that deal as well?
Of course we were. I mean, you know, we're involved in all negotiations that involve the implementation of the New Decade, New Approach Agreement, which was signed up to after more than 2 years of negotiation, which, you know, and I spent virtually every week a number of days in Belfast as part of that negotiation. So of course we're involved
New Decade, New Approach, Minister, was designed to get the Assembly to do the work, not to get Westminster to do it. That Westminster was asked to deal with Irish language, doesn't that completely undermine the Stormont Assembly then?
No, look, let's not focus solely on negatives here, okay? What happened in the last number of days was that the Secretary of State, Brandon Lewis, agreed And we had spoken about this some time ago. You know, we met and had a long conversation on this in Lockern 10 days ago. And what was agreed was that we would try to work with all of the parties to ensure that all elements of the New Decade, New Approach agreement were implemented. We knew that the Irish language legislation was something that was outstanding, as well as legislation that also, that same legislation deals with Ulster Scots and sets up commissioners to promote both languages. And it was clearly part of the challenge of getting a new First Minister both nominated and accepted, that actually this element of the New Decade, New Approach agreement would be clarified in terms of implementation, because this was one of the most difficult things to get agreement on. And so what the British government has said, and I think they're right to do it, is they've said, look, let's give some time and space to a new executive with a new First Minister and with the same Deputy First Minister, give them time and space to actually legislate as they agreed they would for language and culture around Irish language and Ulster Scots. If they can't do it by October, well, then the British government will do it in Westminster, just like they've had to do in other areas, whether that's equal marriage, whether it's abortion services and so on.
And as we know, though, that triggered a major crisis in the DUP. And I want to ask you, do you expect the Northern Ireland First Minister, Paul Given, to remain in his position now, given the events that have taken place this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to be accurate here. I mean, I think while that decision did trigger real difficulty within the DUP, I mean, there has been real tension within the DUP for some time now. I mean, don't forget, the DUP has only ever had four leaders. They don't do leadership change very often. When Edwin Poots won the leadership, it was a very, very close contest with Geoffrey Donaldson. There was only a couple of votes in it. So the party clearly was divided, and this certainly was a trigger that ultimately resulted in the end of Edwin Poots' leadership.
I just want to ask you about Paul Given, the First Minister that's in place at the moment, because there are reports that he has been asked by party officers to resign. Now, the DUP is not commenting on those reports today. But what's your expectation in relation to his position?
Well, I mean, this is a matter for the DUP. I mean, they're the largest political party in Northern Ireland. They need to nominate their candidate for First Minister. They have, under Edwin Poots' leadership, they appointed Paul Given, and that was accepted under the deal that was agreed with the Secretary of State. And obviously, you know, we were involved in all of those conversations with the parties as well as with the Secretary of State. Now there's going to be a leadership change in the DUP, and it's really up to that new leader when they're appointed to ensure that they have the team that they want in Stormont.
Does it trigger another crisis, though, if Paul Given goes? Because you're into bargaining then, perhaps around the protocol, in order for a First Minister to be installed.
But you can't bargain around the protocol for a First Minister to be installed in Northern Ireland. I mean, that's a negotiation with the EU. I mean, and the EU isn't going to get boxed into a situation where they have to give concessions in a way that's inconsistent with international law to facilitate the nomination of a First Minister in Northern Ireland. I mean, I think we need to be realistic here and what's possible. I think the DUP will be realistic, by the way. You know, this is an experienced party that they've had a terrible number of weeks. I think they will now look to putting a new leader in place quickly and to provide stability behind that person. And we need to give them the space and time to do that. I also think other parties in the executive will be responsible in terms of trying to get that new First Minister in place, if there is a new First Minister, or if Paul Given remains in office. But the core issue here is about the people of Northern Ireland and the jockeying for position within political parties and the very polarised and quite aggressive political debate that we've seen in recent weeks has got to calm down. The Irish government and the British government have got to be a stabilising influence where we can be, and we've got to work with parties, all of the parties, to make sure that we focus on what's good for Northern Ireland.
Okay, Matt Carthy, I just want to go back to you on the discussion around Northern Ireland and that to get your reaction to that Loyalist Communities Council statement urging the DUP to stop concessions to Sinn Féin and also warning Irish government ministers and officials that they're not welcome in Northern Ireland. What's your reaction to that?
Oh, I think it was a disgraceful and very unwelcome intervention by a group of people that, let's remember, have no mandate and very little support within any community in the north. Of course, government ministers, north or south, are free to go anywhere in our country. And I think the evidence would point to a very warm welcome for any elected government minister.
On that deal done with the Northern Secretary, Brandon Lewis, involving your own party leader and Edwin Poots, isn't it remarkable that a party that boycotts Westminster would go cap in hand to the UK government and ask it to push Irish language legislation through a parliament that you refused to sit in?
No, and we didn't go cap in hand to anybody. We simply insisted that agreements that had been signed up to were actually delivered. Remember that the Irish language legislation, and as the Minister has pointed out, encompassing the rights of Ulster Scots speakers also, was agreed 15 years ago. It was subsequently agreed on a number of occasions, including when the DUP and Sinn Féin and the other parties in the executive agreed the New Decade, New Approach agreement. So this was simply about implementing agreements. Our preference would have been that we could have brought this legislation through the Assembly and got agreement.
Doesn't it completely undermine the Assembly when you have to go to Westminster to get that legislation through?
I think it completely undermines the DUP's limited and narrowing assertions that they're up for equality and up for delivering rights for all sections of the community. This is an important issue for some. We would have hoped, and I think most people would have expected, that the Irish language legislation would have been in place many years ago and that political efforts could be concentrating on other very important social and economic issues.
Yeah, there are other social and economic issues. I mean, the New Decade, New Approach document outlines around 80 different recommendations, including, I think, more police, more healthcare staff, more teachers and so on. So why was Irish language plucked out of that ahead of all of those things?
Because Irish language was the one area where the DUP categorically said they had no intention of delivering within
it was
the
made a
framework
priority.
Of the Assembly. It was one part of the discussions around the implementation of the New Decade, New Approach agreement. And it was the one area where the DUP categorically said they had no intention of actually fulfilling their obligations. So therefore, there was a responsibility. The two governments are guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement and subsequent agreements, and therefore the British government, who had the facility to deliver this legislation, had an obligation to do so, and the agreement was simply an acknowledgement of that.
Okay, Minister, just very briefly.
I think it's important for your listeners to sort of understand the context around why the Irish language legislation is so important to so many people in Northern Ireland, because even for people who don't speak Gaeilge, it's the symbolic nature of what the calls for an Irish language bill have become that have made this so emotive. So this is really about, for many nationalists in Northern Ireland, wanting a recognition from unionism that Irishness is part of Northern Ireland too. And the Irish language has become the totem for that. So what they want to see is unionist leadership recognising that Irish culture and Irish language is part of Northern Ireland and its history and its communities and so on. And while unionism resists that, many in nationalist communities see that as unionism not recognising who Irish people are in terms of their culture and their identity and so on.
Okay.
And so identity-based politics in Northern Ireland is always highly emotive, which is why for many unionists, the protocol is what undermines their identity as British people, which is why they're so resistant to it. So these issues, of course, you're right, you know, healthcare, teachers, and many of the bread and butter issues that are so important to the functioning of any country are important in the New Decade, New Approach agreement. But Irish language legislation, along with Ulster Scots legislation, was in many ways the obstacle that prevented agreement for about 18 months in those negotiations. And that's why we finally got a compromise deal that everybody accepted. And that's why it's important that it gets implemented. And the British government agrees with that position.
All right.
And that's why they've said if politicians in Northern Ireland cannot follow through on their commitments here, that the British government will do that.
All right. I'm going to have to take a break. We'll talk about travel after this.